What's going on, world, and welcome back to the Double M Show. You already know how we do it every week. We got Mr. Mike Nice in the building. What's going on, brother?
Hey, man. It's good to be here, per usual, holding down the show with you. It's a big show here. Final show 2019.
Final show of 2019. You know, it's almost been a year that we've had Double M Media. We started in February. Now we are here in December of 2019. It feels good, man. This feels 37 episodes in. Ooh. Feels like it's a major accomplishment.
Yeah, man. We're making our way. And still greatness to come. Greatness lies ahead of us for sure when it comes to Double M Media.
Absolutely. A lot to talk about, a lot to get into. I am also DJ Mies in the building, episode 37, like I said, on the Double M Show. And, you know, the year is wrapping up, Mike, but not only the year is wrapping up, the decade is wrapping up as well. We are entering in our lives our fourth decade.
It's a blessing.
Isn't that weird?
Isn't
it weird to say?
It's a blessing.
We lived through the 90s. Lived to the early 2000s, we lived to the 2010s, and now we're about to enter the 2020s.
Wow. Again, it's a blessing to be here. You know, four decades on being on this earth, you know, wow. Seen a lot. And, you know, old folks will still call us young.
Yeah.
You know, my parents still like to call me young, and I'm looking at them like, yo, you know how old I am? Like, I'm not that young anymore. But at the same time, we have seen a lot. We have definitely seen a lot, man.
And, you know, we pray and we give it up to the Lord that we see many more to
Amen
come
to that.
Onto the Double M Show. But, Mike.
Yes, sir.
We got to handle business on this podcast, as we always do. So, please, sir, what is on this playlist this week?
So, you know, a lot of hot things going on in the world right now. Definitely want to touch on something that's going on in the sports world, more specifically NFL, New England Patriots. Are we in the midst of Spygate 2.0?
Spygate 2.
There's something going on right now with the Patriots that we definitely have to talk about. And, you know, to put it out there, quite frankly, were the Patriots caught cheating again? We're going to talk about it here. That's something on the playlist. Also, like Marv mentioned, you know, the decade is coming to an end. 2010s are closing up. And we want to just look back at some of the top memorable moments in Boston sports. You know, we are both from Boston. We're doing a show in Massachusetts. Top moments in Boston sports history from the last 10 years. I know Marv has some in mind. I have some in mind. Definitely want to hear from you guys who are tuned in. You know, let us know. Drop us some comments about things you remember happening over the last 10 years in Boston sports history. Doesn't necessarily have to be a championship, I know.
Oh, yeah.
We used to win a lot of championships around these parts.
Memorable, just something that just sticks
into
your head.
Big game, big play, something right. That sticks out for sure. We also have a couple more things we want to talk about, possibly get to. I know there's some developing news with Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah.
And the whole situation revolved around his death and some things that are still unfolding, happening still to this current day. We might get to that later on in the show. And also, you know, like we said earlier, Marv said earlier, 2019 is wrapping up. We're here in December, final show of 2019 here on Double M Sports. What are some top moments for you personally in your life from this past year? Again, I have some. Mar probably has some. And we also always want to hear from you guys who are tuned in. Some things that maybe happened to you throughout the year that, you know, you definitely want to shout out and big up a little bit here on the show.
All right, man. So let's get right into it. Starting with Spygate 2.0 that seems to not go away here. You know, yesterday afternoon, everyone got the notification. Patriots seemed like they were filming the Bengals sideline. Quickly, too, maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes later, it comes out, oh, no, this is just something that the Patriots were there filming, a documentary on the Do Your Jobs. We've all seen it here in Boston. very great specials.
Sure is.
Your job special, and, you know, it's just a misunderstanding. You know, as naive as I was, I said, oh, that's
no biggie.
It.
No biggie.
No biggie. Do your job. They're going to clean this up. I wake up the next morning. This is going to be all cleared away. But then you find out, you know what? This isn't going away.
Sure did it.
Come to find out, you know, these guys are there. They're filming the Bengals sideline. There's 8 minutes, at least 8 minutes of them just filming the sideline. No one really knows what's going on. Is it for this do your job special that they're saying? But why would you need 8 minutes of someone filming the Bengals? The Bengals seem to be pissed about this. Like, they're really irate of what's going on. It seems to be, you know, the guy was working for the Patriots. He's got Patriots gear on, Boston Bruins hoodie. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty damn obvious who he is and who he's working for. You know, Belichick comes out, Mike, and he's adamant. He has nothing to do with what's going on with TV programming and anything like that. But they also do admit, like, hey, those are our guys. They were there. If they did something, they were at the wrong for it, and we'll take full responsibility. So there's a lot to unravel. We obviously know Spygate happened in 2007. For some reason, Mike, I knew it happened in 2007, but I always think about 2001 for some reason of Spygate. It doesn't seem, because 2007,
it
you just think
very
of the,
long ago.
You just think of the undefeated season. You don't remember that Spygate was really in 2007. It just seems like years and years ago, but it was pretty recent.
Yeah.
12 years ago, Spygate happened, and, you know, Belichick got, he's on a short leash. He's on a very short leash when it comes to the NFL and this cheating scandal. So I really don't think Belichick has to do with anything with it, but damn, Patriots, this doesn't look good at all.
It's just a bad look. And I mean, the fact that it's just the Patriots again caught up in something. The whole situation of someone being on the sidelines, possibly filming, it's not good. Whatever, any way you want to look at it, it's not good at all. But then you add on just the fact that the Patriots have dealt with different scandals over the last decade. You know, and prior to that, so we're going back to 2007 as well. You got 2007 with Spygate. Then you got 2014 with Deflategate. And now you have this current situation here. Where, again, it's kind of like Spygate all over again. And that's just what really, you know, has people going up in arms about us. Because, you know, you got people who are Patriots fans like, oh, no, the Patriots might have got caught doing something again. Then you got the people out there who hate the Patriots for saying, these bastards are doing it again. And, you know, people who, again, hate the Patriots, oh, they can't wait to see some news like this to get on the Patriots. Yeah. Those cheating these guys are doing it again. They keep cheating. That's how they keep winning, because they keep cheating and spying and deflating balls. People can't stand it. And the news comes out, people will jump on it, you know, as soon as possible. Another thing with this, and you mentioned it a little bit, Belichick, like you said, is on a short leash. And this is why I personally don't believe the Patriots have done anything wrong to an extent of literally trying to... I mean, I have a couple reasons why I feel like Patriots haven't done anything wrong in this situation. Number one, like you said, Patriots have done stuff and they've gotten caught for it.
Yeah.
Spygate, they got caught. I think I remember reading early today, Belichick got fined like $500,000 and the team got fined $250,000 on top of losing some draft picks. And then, you know, in 2014, Brady gets suspended for 4 games. They don't necessarily come to a conclusion as to what happened, but they just – NFL felt Brady was lying, so he needed to be suspended.
I mean, the man broke his phone.
I think he destroyed his phone for other reasons.
The man destroyed his phone.
That's just me personally. I think Brady destroyed his phone for other reasons. But
whatever was there, we couldn't find out what was on Brady's
phone. Brady was never letting anybody get to his phone, no matter what was on it. But, yeah. Brady was suspended for those 4 games. I don't remember if the team suffered. Did the team lose any draft picks or anything?
We lost draft picks.
I think they did lose some draft pick or several. I don't remember how. I do remember Brady got suspended for 4 games. So, going back to that, I don't think the Patriots want to go through any situation like that again where they possibly can lose draft picks or lose Brady or team get fined. I don't think any organization who dealt with something before wants to go back through that, especially under the same regime. Like, this is still Kraft.
Yeah.
Kraft's New England Patriots. So why would you want to put yourself in jeopardy again? That's reason one why I don't think they did anything.
We have on Lynch's Speaks, you know, he's coming out and saying that the cameraman asked if they could just delete the footage and it'll all be forgotten per sources. Can you elaborate on that for us, please? Is this prior to them getting the investigation, or is this coming out just
That's some funny
now?
Business. That's some funny business.
Things just keep, as the hours go on, things just keep getting weirder.
Elaborate
weirder.
On your per sources there. But the second reason why I also feel they didn't do anything, Patriots, why the hell would you want to film the Cincinnati Bengals? Yeah. Possibly the worst team in the league.
Out of all teams. And that's the major flag right there. And, you know, the haters are not going to talk about that. Like, it's the best. No one wants to film the 1-12 Bengals. You had the Ravens. You had the Kansas City coming up. Why didn't you go out there and do it? It just doesn't make no sense. And you were talking about how the Patriots always get caught.
Yeah, they're not caught.
They always get caught with decisions. It reminds me of my little brother. It does. My little brother always gets caught doing something.
Your little brother watches the show.
Yeah.
Gonna let put his business out there?
He just always gets caught. I'm not gonna tell him what he does. He just always gets caught. You see me, Mike, when I was younger, I was pretty slick. I was pretty smooth. I used to get away with a lot of things.
Slick mob.
You know? So, but my little brother, he doesn't have that in his genes. Patriots don't have that in their genes. So you have to be smarter. If you're gonna cheat, do you really think they're gonna wear Patriots and Boston paraphernalia to try to cheat and go up? I just don't see that happening. Yeah. I feel like you just gotta, when you know you always get caught with something, you just gotta move a little smarter.
True.
And is this something that they did in their own hands? Like, they had to have been ordered to record the Bengals. No one's just going out there to say, oh, let me try to just steal some signals here on my own self. It just doesn't make sense.
It's a weird story. Doing anything wrong? Let me see. I'm reading the comments here. He would not ask for it to be deleted. That's a smoking gun. You know, again, it's a very weird situation.
It's weird.
And, you know, facts are still, information is still coming out of if this actually did happen or didn't happen. We don't know the full story. All we do know is the Patriots and Belichick have completely denied any wrongdoing or any knowledge of what happened.
All I can say about this situation, and it's unfortunate, I gotta say, but the Patriots are not innocent. Maybe, you know, Belichick didn't, you know, call out for what, this to happen.
That's what Brady said, though, with the balls.
The Patriots weren't innocent there either. I mean, we know for a fact that the balls were deflated. We know for a fact that they were filming the Bengals sideline. Like, these are facts. It's not something that's opinion. Now, is there malice in both of those situations? Did Brady deserve to get suspended for a deflated football? Hell no. What happens now? Do I think the Patriots attempt to steal signals from the Bengals to help them win this Sunday? Hell no. But something happened, something that's not supposed to happen. You can't just go out there and film another team's sideline. I don't care what it's for, what kind of documentary. Patriots are going to get in trouble somehow. They are, and they deserve it if this is really true.
A question came up. How is Deflategate have actual proof? They weighed and measured, they weighed the balls that were used in the AFC Championship game, and the PSI,
there's no proof of who did it, but
there's no proof of who did it, but there's proof that the balls were deflated. Now, again, Brady came out and said he had zero knowledge of that happening. But I think if you just being smart, somebody within the Patriots organization did it. Whether you don't know who, when, where, someone within the Patriots organization did it. That's just the facts that I believe came out from Deflategate back in 2014. And again, like you said, in this situation, whether the Patriots have knowledge or Belichick knew or whatnot, for some reason, somebody was over there doing some funny business.
Yeah, I mean, they had the advanced team scout there. You had obviously some private contractors there too, but those are your people that you send out there. So, like the Patriots did come out and say, they said, hey, we are responsible for whatever happens, because they know that's their peoples out there. They have to take the responsibility of whatever happened. Now, you know, we still need to see the film. I don't think the public will see it. I doubt it. But how crazy is this? Are they zooming in on coaches when they do a call a specific play and things like that? Or is there just really a pan from the outside trying to get a nice clip for the do your job? And we don't know. We haven't really seen it.
We probably won't. I mean, did we get footage of Spygate and what was being filmed back then? I don't think footage like that ever came out. And, you know, in this case, too, we might not ever see what were the 8 minutes that were filmed all about. Who knows? All I do know is when it's all said and done with this Patriots, you know, era of Brady, Belichick, Kraft, when it's all said and done and the, you know, the videos come out or the DVDs or, you know, the books that are going to be written about this team, you know, there's going to be a lot of content and chapters written about the success of this team. Winning Super Bowls, Brady being the greatest quarterback of all time, Belichick being the greatest coach of all time, Robert Kraft, you know, buying this team, you know, and bringing so much success their way, building the Patriot culture in the Patriot way. It's going to be so much written about that. But a few chapters in that book, a few portions of that DVD, whatever stories are going to be told about this team years from now, there's going to be three column chapters, possibly. Two for sure, maybe three, depending on how this story unfolds. It's going to be something about
all the time.
Deflategate. It's going to be something about Spygate. And depending on how this new situation unfolds, I know we're here calling it Spygate 2.0, whatever the new slick name that'll come out about it. But this could be also another, you know, mark, blemish in this era of Brady Belichick.
I mean, we forget now. But there was talks, and this is another conversation I'm going to bring up later into the show, but there was talks after the Spygate. Oh, Patriots aren't able to win ever since they got caught winning with Spygate. It's been 10 years. You remember after they didn't win 2007. So there was talks, hey, how good was this Brady Belichick tandem? Were they cheating the whole time?
That's with also the Super something Bowls? Else could come out from the early Super Bowls.
Were they cheating all this time with the Super Bowls and things like that? Obviously. Things change around real quick. They won 2013. They won 14, 18. So they won championships afterwards. And, you know, especially after the Deflategate winning afterwards was really good silencer. But, and, you know, people weren't really talking about Patriots and cheating. Yeah. But now the noise comes back up. Oh, these guys are cheaters. These guys are liars. They're always trying to find a way. And that's not, especially if you support the team. These are things that you do not want to hear about your team. You don't want to hear about. You just want to say, hey, look what we've done, and this is how we've accomplished it. And now the only way to silence this, you just got to win.
That's it. That's all it boils down to. And I mean, we've seen this story over and over with the Patriots. Something comes out, like, again, 2014. Something comes out. Patriots find some more motivation to overcome the odds. Boom, championship. You know, and then 2015-16 season where, you know, Brady actually gets suspended for those four games. Now here's more motivation. Oh, Brady got suspended. Now he's coming back on a revenge tour. Boom, they get to the Super Bowl, beat the Atlanta Falcons. Here's something else now that can be fuel to the fire and the Patriots possibly making another run to the Super Bowl. And you know what? As a Patriots fan, I mean, y'all not blind watching the show. You see my shirt. You see my hat. You see Marv's. Is that a Patriots?
No, so not, Patriot. Not this time. Not this time.
We Patriots fans over here. And if you want to add more fuel to the fire for the Patriots to march their way, I'm all for it. Can't be mad at it at all.
Yeah, I mean, last week, right? Not even last week. A couple days ago when we did the roundtable show, and I see that Will agrees with it as well.
Yeah.
When we did the roundtable, I said, hey, the referee thing, screwing the Patriots like this, might have been the best thing for the Patriots. It gives them something to rally around. You know, they can't really rally around the same thing last year. Brady's old. Brady's not too good. Yep. You can't really do that this year. Brady hasn't been played too well. They needed something else to really rally around. It's like, okay, it's us against the world now. The refs are not even on our side. Now you add this on top of it, it could be something that, you know, lights a little fire into the Patriots and maybe helps them turn things around. Maybe, hopefully, you blow out the Bengals. Something you haven't done all year.
Been a while.
Blow out the Bengals, and that could spark something huge.
Yeah.
And maybe you can try to go for another round and get number 7.
Yeah. You said that. Will also said it. This could turn out to be the best thing that could have happened to this team. You know?
Or it could destroy them. Patriots don't win.
One or the other.
This starts to become big news. And, you know, Brady leaves and all. It could go either way.
I'm leaning on the side of history, though. You know, still the same coach, still the same quarterback. Patriot way is still there. And we've seen twice now where something has happened to this team. And they've used that as motivation to march their way. I'm going to lead on the side of this is possibly something that can light the fire. You know, bulletin board material, whatever you want to call it. Patriots will not let this story come out and they'll march through. And at the end, possibly, you know, hold up the Lombardi Trophy once again and say, yeah, everything else said, we still the champs.
Yeah, that's the only way, you know, you can really combat something like that. So that's a little bit on Spygate, too. Obviously, when these things develop more, we'll be here to talk about it.
For sure, for sure.
And you could get our opinions. There won't be no more shows, but we still do Patriots Roundtable here on the CLNS Media Show. We still have our Patriots post-game show as well. But let's move on, Mike. You know, this is a show of celebration.
Yeah, man.
This is a show of, we talked about it, a decade's worth here in Boston. There's a lot of things you can talk about what happened, what transpired in Boston from 2010 to 2019. Obviously, you got the Patriots, their Super Bowls. You have Celtics, they had one championship stint in this decade. You had the Red Sox, they've had two champion stints in this decade. Bruins, I believe they had two champion stints in this decade.
Making the finals.
2011,
and then they made the finals.
The year before.
Year before, yes.
So they've had two championship stints. This is what we do in Boston. There's a lot of championship stints, but there's also a lot of moments, a lot of things that have happened that, you know, you just can't forget whether you was... Speaking of our age, whether we were in high school, college, or now post-college in this decade, a lot of things have, you know, caught our attention. Let's speak on it, Mike. What's one thing that comes off the mind from this decade that you'll always remember?
Well, we're going to keep it, you know, obviously sports-related, and it's easy to talk about championships. Very easy to talk about championships. And obviously, I think the first... championship that really stood out. I know the Bruins won in 2011, which was huge. It's good for the first time the Bruins won a championship in a long time. You know, it was big for the city, for the many, many hockey fans, Bruin fans in the city. 2011 was huge. But 2013, Boston Red Sox. Here's a team that, you know, they weren't necessarily the best team in the league at the time, you know, compared to what they did in 2018, where they ran through the league, best record in the MLB, and marched their way to a championship. 2013, Red Sox rallied around a situation with the Boston Marathon. You know, I remember being in college, Marathon Monday, then when that situation took place. And, you know, it was huge. A Celtics game got canceled. You know, Bruins game, I mean, a Red Sox game might have got canceled, postponed or whatever. And then coming out of that, you know, the whole situation where Red Sox, you know, honored, you know, people who maybe got killed or were injured in a situation. Big Poppy David Ortiz takes the mic and says, This is our effing city.
This is our fucking city.
You know, they got the different uniforms on with the Boston Strong. They rallied around that situation, in a sense, put the city on their back and marched their way to a championship in 2013. And then you remember following that, they had the parade and whatnot. And those guys went to the Boylston Street where the marathon takes place, where the finish line was. You know, they put the trophy down on the finish line with the Boston Strong. And that was huge. That was something big in 2013 for sure that stands out to me.
That was, you talk about the Boston Marathon and just the road to the World Series.
The rallying cry.
I remembered David Ortiz's grand slam against was it Texas?
It might have been.
He had a huge grand slam.
Detroit might have been Detroit.
Might have been Detroit. All right, huge grand slam to just really get things going in the ALCS, and then you know go to the World Series, winning it all, and like you mentioned, just the parade in Boston Strong and everything like that. That David Ortiz cemented his legacy in Boston, in the Boston realm, forever. One thing I think of, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of highlights.
Definitely shoot yours out as well. If you could think any, drop those in the comments. Let us know some things that really stand out to you from this past decade.
We're going
to
talk about a lot of highlights, but, you know, being memorable doesn't always have to be a highlight. I remember the Boston Celtics being up 3-2 against the Miami Heat. Prior to that year, Miami Heat knocked out the Celtics in 2011. They knocked out the Celtics and they beat them pretty bad. 4-1, I think. Beat the Celtics bad. Celtics come back in 2012. Game 5, Paul Pierce hits a crazy shot over LeBron to put the Celtics up 3-2. Now you go back home and you might be able to take out the Heat, where you could face OKC in the finals. And that Celtics team would have beat them. If Rondo, a healthy Rondo and everything like that, that Celtics team would have beat OKC. So now we go to Game 6 in Boston, 2012.
I was there.
LeBron James puts on one of the best basketball performances I have ever witnessed. Look, I've seen Michael Jordan highlights. Obviously, we grew up with Kobe Bryant. But to witness that live, just a man on a mission who didn't crack a smile. It was one of the rare times, or maybe the only time, we've seen LeBron with that killer instinct that we always talk about. Like, if LeBron had this killer instinct, he would really be the greatest. And he displayed that against the Boston Celtics Game 6. What was his numbers? Think 45 points. 15 rebounds, 5 assists. You know he wasn't assisting that game. It was give me the ball and I'm going straight to the rack. Dunks, jump shots. It didn't matter. The Celtics couldn't. They were done after the second quarter, and it was just a LeBron James show. One of the craziest games I've ever witnessed.
You know, other than the Patriots losing the Super Bowl to the Giants in 2007, you know, Celtics losing the finals in 2010. There's some moments that really hurt. Really hurt. That game, obviously, but that series in total hurt me to the core. And, you know, part of me thinks that was fixed. It was fixed. The NBA did not want Celtics versus OKC in the finals. That's just me personally. But the fact that the Celtics couldn't win that series after being up 3-2, going back to Boston for Game 6, you know, it sucked to watch. Again, I was at that game. I used to work security at the Garden. You know, sitting on the back of the hoop stanchion. You know, feeling every time LeBron dunked the ball, and the whole stanchion just vibrated. And my job, I can only look out to the crowd. I can't watch the game because, you know, I'm working. It's my job to watch the crowd as a security guard. And just watching the fans of Boston's face as that game went on was just disappointing. Only highlights and memories I have of that game are watching the fans. Yeah, I went on, you know, ESPN, YouTube, whatever, saw the highlights. But that moment that night, because you watched that game live. Of course you watched the game live. The only memories I have of that night is staring at the crowd, watching sadness on Boston fans' faces. Yeah, damn.
That game, Mike, I will never, ever forget. That was just, he had the look in his eyes like, okay. And that was a game that, we're talking about solidifying legacies. When you're going to talk about LeBron and his highlights, you're going to bring up the Cleveland championship. But right after that, you're talking about game six.
Yeah, that's something that's going to stand out on his career.
That's the standout. What else, Mike? What else memories you got?
You know, I'm going to keep it down the championship memory lane here. Championship memory lane. 2014, New England Patriots. Again, you beat the Indianapolis Colts in the AFC Championship game. But coming out of that game, Patriots might have been tampering with footballs. No one knew the real story. NFL trying to get to the bottom of it. No one's going on, but it's just news out there that the Patriots might have been tampering with the footballs. At this time, nothing can be done in terms of, you know, suspensions or fines going out. The only thing left to do, the noise was there, and the only thing left to do for the Patriots was to play the Super Bowl against the Seattle Seahawks. You get to this game, Seattle Seahawks, Patriots in the Super Bowl, great football game. It's a great game to watch. Back and forth, you know, Patriots had some good plays, highlights. Seattle made some big plays, some highlights. But you get to the end of the game where Patriots are up. And everybody knows the story by now. Seattle Seahawks with a chance to win the game. It was 28-24, I think the score was.
Yep.
28-24, but the Seattle Seahawks have the ball, goal line, 1-2 yard line, whatever it was, right there. And everybody knows Seattle Seahawks have Marshawn Lynch, possibly the best running back in the game at that time. I don't know about you guys, but I remember sitting with Marv in our dorm room thinking, well, Patriots just lost the Super Bowl.
Man, I was on the floor.
Patriots just lost their third Super Bowl.
I was on the floor with just my head down. Like, I can't believe this happened
again. I walked out the room.
I can't believe, talking about the curse catch.
I can't believe it happened again. That's all I kept saying. After that catch was made, I forgot who made it on the Seattle Seahawks. I'm drawing a blank on the name. Jermaine Curse. He made that catch, and all I kept repeating to Marvin, everybody else in the room was, I can't believe it happened again. And I walked out the room and just head down. Patriots lost the Super Bowl. Because, come on, let's not be stupid here. Marshawn Lynch on the 1-2 yard line.
It's over.
Next thing you know, pandemonium.
Yeah.
The interception by Malcolm Butler. Oh, my goodness.
I also have that game as a memorable. See, everyone's going to talk about 2016. The biggest comeback.
Oh, I was going to talk about that, too.
The biggest comeback ever. But, Mike, I'm sorry. 2014 Super Bowl is bigger to me. 2014, there's a lot that goes into this 2014 Super Bowl. You got to remember, this is 10 years now. Patriots haven't won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
10 years now, you're talking about, okay, Joe Montana, he might be the best quarterback. Tom Brady's, you know, he's up there. He's up there with Peyton Manning.
Yet.
He's not the greatest. He's up there with Peyton Manning. He's up there with the Montanas. Like, that was still a conversation. He's lost two finals prior. He's lost in 2010. He's lost in 2007. So he's 3-2. He's going back into the Super Bowl again. If he loses again, that'll make him 3-3. But if he wins, After not winning in 10 years, he's solidified as the greatest quarterback of all time. It just puts him in that conversation. So I felt that stress on me. I felt it as a fan of Brady. I felt the stress of he better win this. Because, oh boy, if he goes 3-3, we're having that LeBron conversation with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
He's gone there a lot of times, but what's the result? So you have that, and then you talk about the game in itself. Two of the best teams. It was such an enjoyable game. Two of the best teams. It was really the best of the AFC versus the best of the NFC.
Sure was.
Going at it. And Seattle had this great defense. Patriots had a pretty decent defense with Darrell Revis and things like that. But Patriots were dominating this game. They found a way to dominate this game. And then you mentioned it, Mike, the curse catch.
Hmm.
That curse catch.
It happened again.
Broke my heart. Cause then it was just, I was just telling myself, Marv, you just gotta tell yourself it's not meant to be. This team is not meant to win any more Super Bowl. Whatever you got when you was a kid,
enjoy it.
Enjoy it. When you was 11, 12 years old, when you won, that's it. That's all you are getting. Cause you're not gonna see it no more. And then Malcolm Butler, out of nowhere, and even at that time, when you're just telling yourself with the little hope that you have, let them score. Let them score.
You get the ball back.
Get
and
the
try.
Ball back with 40 something seconds left and try something. Let them score. Patriots, don't call timeout. And I'm just stressing more. Dont'a Hightower, he makes that first stop on Marshawn Lynch.
I remember that.
Dont'a Hightower, you haven't lost a Super Bowl with Hightower playing.
Ah.
The one Super Bowl he didn't play,
Eagles.
Hey, man. You know how Doc always says,
starting five, never lost.
Starting five, never lost. You never lost a Super Bowl with Dont'a Hightower. Hightower makes that first stop. And then obviously we know with the rest with Malcolm Butler and how he won us a Super Bowl in 2014 and put Brady as the greatest quarterback of all time.
Huge.
That's the best one for me.
That was huge. Huge game. I remember being a college kid just going nuts.
Oh, man, it was a blizzard.
Oh,
you remember?
Snowing outside, but nobody cared. You know, we took our campus by storm. It might have almost brought out the SWAT team on us.
Oh, man, I was losing, crying. I was crying. We're the greatest.
Yeah.
We're the greatest.
Again, if you're tuned in, let us know in the comments any moments in Boston sports history that stand out to you guys. We just talked about the 2013 Red Sox. Marv talked about LeBron's Game 6 against Boston in Boston. We just talked about the 2014 Patriots Super Bowl win. Let us know if you guys have any in your mind for sure. What's another one you have, Marv?
This one is a recent one. And we could just... I'm going to talk about the specific game, but then we could just talk about the season in itself. The 2017 Celtics was incredible. That was probably one of the funnest teams I've ever watched. One of the funnest. Just you enjoyed watching a team led by a 5'9 point guard.
Yeah.
And the game I'm talking about is Game 2, Wizards. Isaiah's sister had passed.
Yep.
It was her birthday. And he comes out and he drops 53 points against the Wizards. 29 points in the fourth quarter in overtime. He was already known as the King of the Fourth at that time. And that, man, that was something special. When you talk about just who Isaiah is, what he meant to the city, playing on his sister's birthday and just going off. Going against a team that's your rival. So it wasn't like – it was a close game throughout. And anytime you needed a bucket, Isaiah Thomas delivered over and over and over again. 53 points. That game has to go into one of the top Celtics games of all time. Talking about the ramifications, it being a playoff game, what happened like that. And then it's just in general, that 2017 Celtics, Mike, was – that was a great team.
Yeah, it was enjoyable to watch. Led by Isaiah Thomas, who had an MVP-like season. He was in the running for a reason.
Yep.
Damn near averaged 30 points a game.
Yep.
A guy who's 5'9", averaging 30 points a game. And, you know, obviously you don't have the big, you know, rough and tough centers in the league anymore like, you know, the Shaqs and whatnot. But obviously in the league now, guys in the paint are still pretty tall, pretty strong, pretty athletic, and, you know, move around and block shots, maybe even switch on you and play a little defense. Obviously, it's tough to slow down a 5'9", you know, guard if you're a center, but Isaiah was making it happen. It was his world, and we were all living in it that season. And it was really fun to watch, you know, not to put a damper on, you know, the moment, but obviously, as many people were excited with the Celtics during that season, how well they were playing, I personally felt like Isaiah, as great as he was, as, you know, decent as the team was, they weren't going to, you know, win a championship or anything crazy. I never felt like the teams that Isaiah was on with the Celtics were built to head to the finals and beat the Golden State Warriors at that time. I know they did get a win over them. It might have been that season as
the
well.
The goal was to get Gordon Hayward
with Isaiah.
And see what you – and they obviously – they could – with LeBron maybe leaving or his last year with Cleveland, yeah. If Isaiah was healthy and you had that Gordon Hayward team with Horford and everything.
Yeah.
That team was going to be number one or number two in the East with the Raptors, and it could have made some noise.
But at the same time, you would have been getting Isaiah with the hip injury.
That's what I'm saying. Healthy. I'm talking about healthy.
Obviously, if you have a healthy Isaiah, you add Gordon Hayward, because you know the thing I kept saying with that team was, it's a good team, but Isaiah can't be your like main number one option. There has to be a legit number two guy or number there has to be some kind of 1-2 or 1-2 or 3 punch. Right. You had Isaiah and Horford there obviously, but there had to be some kind of wing player that can really step up and take over in times, because I just felt Isaiah in a playoff series, obviously in that year it didn't seem like anything was holding Isaiah back, but I felt like once you got to better talented teams, you're gonna run into issues. You know, the year prior to that, when they first had Isaiah, we saw what happened when they faced Cleveland in the playoffs and how they, you know, pretty much
hurt on him.
Yeah, they took Isaiah out the picture for the most part. But either way, that season was fun and amazing to watch. Everything that Isaiah did going into the playoffs, everything that he went through. Guy lost his tooth in a game.
Yeah.
Lost his sister. You know, it was a lot. But it was still, like you said, that playoff series, that game, that season – 2007-18 season, still fun one to watch for the Boston Celtics.
Definitely, 2017 Boston Celtics has a special place in my heart for sure. Let's do two more, Mike. Two more memorable moments that happened in Boston sports decade. And you guys also chime in as well if you have any.
Well, you said it earlier, you know, the 2014 Patriots season championship win was big to you.
Right.
But, man, Marv, that game in 2016 against the Atlanta Falcons, I'll admit it. I know I do the Double M show. I mean, the post-game show and the roundtable, whatnot. That Super Bowl against Atlanta, you know, I did everything in my power to at least stay tuned into that game in some way, shape, or form.
I was out.
I didn't want to watch anymore. I didn't want to watch that game against Atlanta anymore. You know, the game was on the TV, but I was listening to it, but I was watching YouTube. I was reading some other sports articles. Might have been playing some game. I don't know what I was doing, but I did not want to watch that game anymore against Atlanta. And then you get to 28-3, and you're just like, damn, this is what it is. Not only are Patriots going to lose a Super Bowl, but they're about to get their asses kicked.
And that's the thing. You're just hoping, yo.
They're about to get their asses kicked.
Patriots, do whatever you can to just make the final score a little bit reasonable.
Oh, my goodness. I said the Patriots are about to get blown out in the Super Bowl. It's over.
Yeah.
You know, if they lost in 2014, it's like, damn, another loss, whatever. But you didn't necessarily have that in your mind of, well, it's over for the Patriots. They lost to Atlanta. You were really thinking like, all right, this is done. This team's over with. The Belichick-Brady era is over. And then slowly but surely, like our guy Mark just said in the comments, that game was hard to watch. Facts. Hard to watch. And then slowly but surely, they start chipping away. Chipping away, chipping away, chipping away. Brady making the drive late in the fourth quarter. Brady getting the ball in overtime. You know, he was already solidified after 2014.
Right.
But drive the way they came back, you know, defense making some plays, Hightower getting a big sack on, you know, Matt Ryan to push him out of field goal position. I think he forced a fumble somewhere in there as well. Being able to score the ball, big plays to Amendola, Edelman. You don't have Gronk, but, you know, Martellus Bennett was huge in that game, stepping up, filling in a little role there in the absence of Gronk. What a comeback. The greatest comeback I personally have ever watched in football history, in Patriots history. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, and I've watched that game now.
Numerous times. Oh, my goodness.
Over maybe 20 times, right? And one thing about that game that people won't talk about unless you've really watched it many times. Mike, you mentioned they were chipping away, but it wasn't really. They come back from the second quarter, and boom, Atlanta scores right away, right? And then Patriots kept defeating themselves as well. They had their three, and it was a long chip away. It took really into the final minutes, into the fourth quarter, where you really could believe.
Late in that game.
Late is when you could really believe, a comeback's really about to happen. Because it wasn't as if the Patriots flipped a switch and they started dominating for this comeback. No, it was minimal plays. And then, you know, the Hightower strip fumble sparked something, but it wasn't there yet. It was still a long...
You still need Brady to get the ball and make something happen.
Still a long way to go.
And Malcolm Mitchell.
He made some clutch catches. I think where you knew, okay, this is about to be something special, was the Edelman catch.
Yep, that was it. That was our catch right there.
The Edelman catch, when he caught that, you as a Patriot fan, you were like, oh, it's our turn.
Yeah, man.
It's our turn to finally have a catch. And that turned the tide right there, man. Atlanta Falcons, the biggest choke job in history. Patriots, the biggest comeback I've ever seen. It was beautiful, and Atlanta's never been the same.
I was just gonna say that Atlanta's never, I don't think, recovered from that loss. They just haven't been. The Atlanta Falcons were a dominant football team that year. Matt Ryan won the MVP, I believe.
Yep.
He put up great numbers. Julio Jones,
of course, as always.
You know, they had their Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman combination. Sanu was there, but they just were never the same.
Mark bringing up James White.
Yeah.
James White went off of that game as well. And I think Deion Lewis got hurt randomly in the last play of the fourth quarter, and James White was just a four.
But that's another moment game from this past decade that stands out in Boston sports for me. I mean, obviously sprinkled in there from 2010 to 2019. There's obviously big games that have happened for sure. So many to think about, but those are some that stuck out for me. You have anything else?
Last one. I know you don't want to talk about this one.
Please don't be something with Celtics and Kyrie.
Oh no, that's not memorable.
Okay,
that's. I really think since you brought it up, in like 15 years from now, that Kyrie era is really not going to be even talked about. You know how sometimes we do it now with our friends? We're like, yo, you remember when we had like Jerry Welch and we had these guys? That's what we're going to talk about. You remember when we had Kyrie for a year or two? Oh, yeah, that never worked out.
I won't talk about it, but yeah, I get what you mean.
But what I'm going to bring up is something I foreshadowed earlier. What did Doc Rivers used to say, Mike? The starting five never lost.
That is true.
Game 7 at L.A., Boston Celtics are up double digits. I'm a high schooler at this point, and I just remember, I'll never forget this, being in my living room, excited as F that we were going to beat the Lakers again. In halftime, you couldn't tell me we were going to lose this game. You could not tell me anything. I had so much joy. I felt like I was going to have more joy than I had in 2007 because this Celtics team, if y'all forget, had no business whatsoever being in the finals. They were like the fourth or fifth seed, and they just found they was one of the teams in history that just knew how to flip a switch. The Cleveland Cavaliers of old with LeBron James knew how to do that as well, to just flip the switch when things weren't going wrong. But that 2010 Celtics flipped the switch, got to the finals, facing the LA Lakers, who've been in the finals 3-4 years in a row at this point. And they bring it to Game 7. Perk gets hurt Game 6. So Rasheed Wallace has to step up. Sheed has a great first half. The whole team's playing well the first half. And then I don't know what type of poison they gave the Celtics. During halftime, someone slipped something in their drink. But that team just played so stupid. It just didn't make sense. That second half of the best of the Celtics, they started fouling like crazy. And I couldn't even defend them. I was like, yo, what are you guys doing? They kept fouling. Pau Gasol started going off. Kobe's having a bad game, mind you. Kobe's bricking. Ron Artest and Pau Gasol put the teams on their back. Pau Gasol makes KG his, I don't even want to say the word, but he takes KG to school in the second half. And Rasheed Wallace fouls out. He just becomes a defensive liability. And I just remember that I watched the whole thing. I watched the Lakers celebration. I watched everything because I was just stuck. I just sat there stuck. Usually if your team loses, you turn off the TV.
That TV is off. Hole in the wall.
I was sitting there emotionless, just watching the Lakers celebrate at home. Kobe getting 5. We were the reasons why Kobe got his number 5. And just watching Ron Artest in the interview, Kobe passed me the ball. Kobe finally passed me the ball. And something people forget, I've only watched this game once. It was the one time only. But I remember Rondo almost shooting themselves back in the game. He hit a couple back-to-back threes, but it was just a little too late.
You know what's crazy? You know, part of me has deleted that game from my mind. But the fact that you sat down here for 2-3 minutes and brought it back to me, I remember. Here's what the hell happened. Like you talked about, that team had no business being in the finals. They went on a run in that playoff series, something that we've never seen before. They literally flipped the switch. But they got to Game 7. I think this is something that Garnett alluded to in the last couple of years. I think he had some kind of interview special on NBA TV or whatnot. That after that second half, them dudes ran out of gas.
They were shot.
There was no bench. Like, they didn't have a bench. You didn't have Perkins there, who's relatively one of the younger guys on the team that could eat up some minutes in the paint.
KG specifically said that was the most tired he's ever been in his life.
That man said he was looking at his legs on the bench during the timeout, like, legs, please, I'm begging you, give me something here. And when I heard him say that in an interview, that just went to tell me, like, they were all really done.
They were done.
There's a reason why Rasheed Wallace never played again after that. I mean, he tried to come back years later, but that was the last full year Rasheed Wallace really had trying to give some effort. And I'm really pissed at Rasheed Wallace. I think overall that whole season, he was never really fully in shape. Because let's be real. Rasheed Wallace, for the most, kind of sucked that year.
Yeah, he was.
He kind of sucked. And he never was in fully the best shape he possibly could have been in. And then to have to depend on him in that Game 7, he gave us everything he could in the first half, but they went in. You ever hear what you play basketball, like, yo, don't sit down, because if you sit down, it's going to be a wrap for you. That's what happened to that team. They sat down in the locker room, probably feeling good, gave a lot of effort. It's Game 7. You giving everything you got.
Everything.
You come out that second half, you trying, and it's just like, nah, what happened to me? Rasheed Wallace had nothing. Garnett, you already knew his knees weren't the same after getting hurt. She's could barely give you anything. Garnett, Pierce, Ray Allen. I mean Ray Allen, Pierce, they're trying, but like overall the team was just tired. I don't remember who that bench was, but I'm pretty sure
Big Baby was all he was.
Big Baby, Tony Allen might have still been there. Tony Allen,
he played great against Kobe.
Eddie House might have still been on the team, but Posey was gone at the time. The bench wasn't anything crazy to really give these guys some minutes, I think they played them dudes, that starting five, played the majority of that second half. They couldn't come out. Because if they came out, who are they going to turn to? Marv really just brought that up.
Yo, we're talking about memories. That's a memory that I watched the Lakers celebrate.
I didn't. Oh, I was done.
I watched them celebrate.
That, you know what?
In my face.
I can't lie to you. You know, NBA TV flashes back some games. And a couple years ago, it came on. And I was arguing myself, should I watch this? Should I not? Should I watch? I said, you know what? It's been however many years. Because I haven't watched that game since the actual day of the game. I watched it.
You watched it?
I watched it. Everything I said happened. And I said, okay. I got a reminder. Never again.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That one, man, that one stings. That Celtics team. Because you want Pierce, KG, Ray to have two to solidify that team. Everyone can get one. And that's what they used to do. Always, anyone could get one. But Pierce, Pierce for me. Obviously, that's your hometown hero. You get two, you're still okay. This guy was a champion for real. Isaiah, you can think of Isaiah Thomas differently because he has two championship rings. Like, you went and you did it again.
You get looked at a little differently.
You get looked at differently.
You got one. That's the guy. He got us a ring.
Yeah, the Dirk Nowitzkis and all that stuff. They got one. It's like, oh, I'm glad they got their one. But if Dirk had two championships, we're talking about Dirk differently.
In a different light. Yeah, it's a completely different light than if you can bring back two championships to your team.
You give Charles Barkley a championship. We're talking about Barkley different. Barkley gets his prop, but. You know,
it stops at a certain spot because he doesn't have any.
So,
but yeah, man, memories over the last 10 years.
It's been a fun year. I mean, I know we didn't talk Bruins, but I do remember them winning in 2011. That was the year I just graduated from high school, so that was a fun time being out and celebrating with my graduated class of high school, 2011.
2012. A memory for me, it wasn't 2013, 2012, the year before I got to school with you, Marv, I was still working at the Garden, and Bruins had made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and it was Game 7. I forgot the team they were facing, but again, I was working security. This time around, I'd have to have my face to the crowd. I was actually in the stands, you know, watching the game, and the Bruins, Game 7 in the TD Garden. You know, the game went into overtime, and Bruins lost in overtime in the Garden. And I never imagined I can hear a stadium so quiet in my life.
Really?
That place, because in overtime hockey, you know, you score a goal, it's over.
It's over, yep.
Once the team scored that goal, that whole stadium I felt like I heard the dudes on the ice celebrating, yelling, screaming. And usually, place is going crazy. You can't hear what the players are saying or screaming on the floor. I feel like I could hear that opposing team cheering on the ice. And the fans' faces just, my goodness.
I remember, I don't know what year, I remember the Bruins, they let up a 3-0 lead.
Oh, that was bad, too. That was bad, too.
Bruins let up a 3-0. So, you know, as much championships that we have here in Boston, We sure do let up some crazy stats as well. Real quick though, Mike, 2019. Give us a couple of highlights of your year and what you look forward to in 2020.
Real quick, it was the Capitals,
Washington Capitals.
They lost Game 7 in TD Garden. Yeah, bro. Highlight of my 2019, definitely my cruise. My cruise I took with my family, that was huge for me. You know. Spending that time away, being out in the Caribbean where my family is from, seeing a bunch of different beautiful islands, enjoying, you know, Carnival Cruise Line and everything they provided on the boat for us. It was a great experience, great trip. Happy I did it. Didn't think I would ever do anything like that in my life, but that was a big highlight for sure. That's something that stands out automatically. For sure.
Right.
What about you?
I'm just going to list out quickly. I'm not going to explain them much. But one highlight, moving out my folks' crib, getting my own apartment here in 2019.
That was huge.
That's a highlight. One of my best friends got married over the summer.
Yes.
Huge highlight. What else? Just relaunching of the Double M Media.
For sure.
Big highlight, big milestone for us, of course. And now, you know, still in 2019, I'm going back to the motherlands this year in a week. So that's going to be another highlight for me going into 2020. Something looking forward to 2020, making Double M bigger. You know, this was a nice start, a nice little thing that we got going on here. I can't wait to come back and, you know, talk with you, Mike, and see how we can make this show bigger and better. That's the goal for 2020 for me.
Real quick, you know, I feel bad because we brought this up early in the show, and I want to just touch on it quickly. If you can recap, you know, that quick information you got about Nipsey and in that situation, I just want to speak on that real quick before we wrap up.
So, you know, here on this show, we've talked about Nipsey Hussle and his unfortunate demise. We know that Eric Holder is the one who killed him. And since then, you know, just recently, the father of Eric Holder was murdered in Los Angeles. And that makes the fourth family member of Holder who has been murdered by the Rolling 60 Crips. That's the group that, you know, Nipsey was with, the gang Nipsey was with. It just comes to show that, you know, Eric Holder's killing has handed out a death sentence to his own family. I'm not here to talk about retaliation and big up it or anything like that, but this is something we spoke about on this show where Eric Holder put some dots on his family's head.
Family, friends, associates, yeah.
And it's unfortunate, you know, it's really unfortunate, especially to family members who most likely are very innocent in this case. They have nothing to do with what Eric Holder did, and now they are suffering the consequences of his doing. And it's sad. It's a real sad situation.
It really is. You know, more killing doesn't necessarily solve anything. Like, someone gets killed, obviously it's unfortunate, but killing after killing that follows along the line of that doesn't necessarily solve anything. But at the same time, similar to Marv said, revenge, retaliation is something that definitely has to come across, you know, people's mind in this situation, knowing the ties that Nipsey had. And unfortunately, it's sad for me to say, but I'm not surprised that that's happening. You know, out there to Eric Holder and his friends, family, whatever. It's very unfortunate, again, but it saddens me to say it doesn't surprise me that that's taking place. But, you know, it's a tough situation all around. It's tough that Nipsey Hussle was taken from the world. It's also tough that, you know, Eric Holder is losing family and friends who possibly had nothing to do with this situation at all. They just happened to hold his last name.
Yeah.
And that's what it's boiled down to. But
definitely. We just want to thank everyone in the comments. We
know
We didn't get to all the comments, but we see them. And the dynasty continues. I definitely feel that one. Talking about the Saints comeback with Kenbrell Tompkins. That's my boy right there.
2019,
Mike, man. Good-ish, man.
It's been great. It's not over yet, though. It's not goodbye.
No. We'll be back.
See you later.
We'll be back. You know, follow us on our social medias. Follow Double M Media everywhere. You just got to spell out the double. People think it's MM Media. You got to spell out the word double, M Media. You'll find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We'll keep you guys updated when we come back.
For sure.
We'll be coming back bigger, better.
2020.
So this is dope, man. Thank you, everyone, for watching. This is Mr. Mike Nice.
Yes, sir.
It's your boy, DJ Mies. And we are signing off on 2019.